This week's Parshas, Parshas Baloitzcha, we will begin on page 778. Vayidaber Hashem. Page 778, Parshas Baloischa. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, B'midbar Sinai, in the Sinai desert, Bashana Hashenis, in the second year, let's say, some Eretz Mitzrayim, of the Jewish people going out from the land of Egypt, B'chaydash HaRishon, in the first month, being the month of Nisan, Leymar saying, V'yasu b'nei Yisrael ha-tapasach b'mayadai, the Jewish people shall make the Karban Pesach in its set time. So we know there was a Karban Pesach brought when the Jewish people were leaving Egypt, and now in the second year of their leaving, Hashem told them to bring a Karban Pesach. So Rashi comments here, this is Rashi on Pasuk Aleph, Rashi points out, and this is from the Sifri, that this episode of the Jewish people bringing the Karban Pesach is actually a source of disgrace for the Jewish people. And that is, Shekol Arbayim Shana Shal Yisrael Bamidbar, all the 40 years the Jewish people were in the desert, V'yikribu Ela Pesach Zeh Belvad, this was the only Karban Pesach that they offered. So even though here we have this command to bring the Karban Pesach, the other Pesachs following, as long as the Jewish people were in the desert, they did not bring the Karban Pesach all the rest of the time. And the question is why? Why didn't they bring the Karban Pesach? So I'm going to share with you the comment of Tosfos in Kedushin Daf Lamed Ches Lamed Zayin Lamed Beis, where he cites this Rashi, he quotes this Rashi, and he asks, "In time of Avalamavai Hikrivu," as we say, Taka, why didn't they offer it? So Tosfos has two approaches. One approach is that by Karban Pesach, the Torah does mention coming to the land of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore that would mean, based on other places in the Torah where we find the word coming to the land, that it means that the obligation to bring the Karban Pesach only began upon entering Eretz Yisrael. Only upon entering Eretz Yisrael and after the land was settled and divided, that is when the obligation of the Karban Pesach actually began. If so, asks Tosfos, so why did they bring Karban Pesach now? If there was no obligation to bring Karban Pesach until they entered Eretz Yisrael, so why now in this week's parasha are they offering a Karban Pesach? And we actually find that in the times of Yeshua, before the land was completely conquered and divided, they brought a Karban Pesach. Tosfos answers, V'yeshlema she'asu api adibar. The answer is, there was a special command. This week's parasha is a special command from Hashem to bring the Karban Pesach, even though typically they would not have been obligated. But then Tosfos asks, well, if we're saying that halachically they were not responsible to have to bring the Karban Pesach in the desert because they weren't in Eretz Yisrael, then what's the gnis? Then what is the disgrace for the Jewish people that we mentioned? So Tosfos answers, V'yesh loimar, the hainu gnusam, the disgrace is, that basically they delayed, they had to remain in the desert for 40 years, but they because of the sin of the spies, and therefore they weren't commanded. If they would have had the merit to enter the land immediately, meaning if not for the sin of the spies, they would have been commanded right away. So in essence, this is saying the Jewish people in the desert were not obligated to bring the Karban Pesach, but that itself is a source of disgrace for them, because if not for the sin of these spies, they would have entered Eretz Yisrael right away and had become obligated. So they missed out on their obligation to bring the Karban Pesach because of their sins. That is the gnus. One time Hashem told them to do it, so they did it. Otherwise, they weren't obligated to do it, And that in itself is a source of disgrace, that they weren't obligated and have the chance to do the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, as important as it is, due to the sin of the spies.
Maybe they did the first one before the spies, and then they couldn't do any more because the spies came after.
That is true. That's exactly the point.
So basically...
No. The point is, according to...
They were going
to
be in Israel 1 year.
The point is that according to this first approach of Tosfos, they were not obligated until they entered the land of Israel. The reason they, this parsha, Tosfos says, was a special commandment from Hashem to bring it.
Was that before the spies?
It is before the spies.
Okay.
But another, but they're not obligated.
Obligated.
The point is they're not obligated. They're only obligated because Hashem said so now. If Hashem would not have said anything, they wouldn't have been obligated because they're not in Eretz Yisrael. And subsequently, when Hashem didn't command them to bring a Korban Pesach, they didn't bring it because they hadn't entered Eretz Yisrael.
If they had no spies, maybe they would have entered the second
That's
year.
The point. The point is that if not for the sin of the spies, they would have entered the land of Israel right away and have had and would have had the mitzvah. So that's the gnus. That's the disgrace. The fact that only once they brought the Korban Pesach and subsequently couldn't bring because of the sin of the spies, they didn't enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. So that is one approach of Tosfos. The first approach of Tosfos as to why they did not bring the Korban Pesach subsequently is because, in essence, they were not obligated to bring the Korban Pesach, because the obligation for Korban Pesach starts once they enter the land of Israel and they conquer it and they settle it. This week's parsha, making the Korban Pesach, was a special commandment from Hashem. And the reason it's a disgrace for them, even though they're not obligated, is the mere fact that they didn't become obligated for another 40 years. That's a disgrace. They didn't become obligated because of their sin. Then Tosfos has a different approach. The other approach is that although the Torah does mention the word coming regarding the Korban, coming to Eretz Yisrael regarding the Korban Pesach, it does not have to mean in the context of Korban Pesach that the mitzvah only begins once they enter the land and conquer it and settle it. What it means is that if you do this mitzvah, you will have the merit to come to the land. If so, why didn't the Jewish people bring the Korban Pesach all those other years? So Tosfos answers, "V'mtaymer imkein lama lo yasu ki im pesach echad." If so, why did they only do one Korban Pesach if really they were obligated? V'yeshloimar lefi shayurubam arelim uksiv kol ora lo yoychal boy v'haynu genusam. So the point is that, and this is really based on the Gemara in Yevamos, that the Jewish people in the desert did not circumcise their children. They did not perform bris milah, which we will discuss soon. Now, Tosfos says, being that the majority of the Jewish people at that point of time were Arelim, they were not circumcised, and we know if you're an Arel, you cannot bring the Korban Pesach. Therefore, at that point of time, the Jewish people could not bring the Korban Pesach, because the majority of them were not circumcised, they never bris milah. And that's the gnus, he says. Tosfos says the disgrace is the fact that they were not able to bring the Korban Pesach because they were uncircumcised. But they're not sinners for not doing it. The Arel asr b'chilas Pesach. An Arel is forbidden to eat from the Korban Pesach. So as long as they are an Arel, they're in the status of Arel, of uncircumcised, they can't bring the Korban Pesach. That in itself, if they were uncircumcised, says Tosfos, that being the cause of the not being the Korban Pesach, that is their gnus, that is their shame. Now, wait a minute.
Excuse me? They were uncircumcised the first time.
No, they were not. The first time they did do a bris milah. In Mitzrayim they did.
So a year later?
You know what? You're asking a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question. You know, it seems that, you know, again, the Jewish people definitely multiplied. More Jews were born, right? So I think at a certain time, at a certain point of time, they came to majority of uncircumcised. But to say they were uncircumcised by the second or the third year to the point, you know, after leaving Egypt, and they did circumcise with the Korban Pesach, I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
I had that question. That's a good question. But now the question is, the imtaymar lama loy malu. Why didn't they circumcise? Why not? And the answer is, the Gemara says in Yevamos, because the northern wind did not blow in the desert all 40 years, because they were excommunicated for the sin of the spies. So here again, the sin of the spies plays a role, but it doesn't play a role in the fact as to whether they were obligated or not essentially in the mitzvah. Tosfos is now saying you don't need to be in Eretz Yisrael to be obligated in the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. but there were circumstances that forced them into the inability of not being able to bring the Korban Pesach. What was that inability? They weren't circumcised. Why weren't they circumcised? Why didn't they have a bris milah? So really the Gemara Yevamos has two reasons. Tosfos brings down one. And that one is that both reasons revolve around the fact that doing a bris milah in the desert was dangerous. It would have been very difficult for them to heal. The second explanation of the Gemara is that without the northern wind blowing, the clouds that surrounded the Jewish people did not scatter, and therefore there really wasn't a lot of sunlight that entered into the camp of the Jewish people. And without sunlight, they would not be able to heal properly. So the point, the pshat of the Gemara that Tosfos brings down is the pshat that the reason they did not circumcise is again because of the danger involved in bris milah. They wouldn't be able to heal properly. They wouldn't be able to heal properly because without a northern wind blowing, that would not scatter the clouds to allow the sunlight in. Why did Hashem not allow the northern wind to blow and not allow the sunlight in? That was part of their excommunication for the sin of the Meraglim. We know that Hashem didn't speak to Moshe for the 40 years in the desert, that whole generation was there. The Jewish people were in a state of excommunication. Part of that state of excommunication from Hashem was that the sun didn't shine in on them. The clouds were blocking the sun, and the sun did not shine in on them. And therefore, because of that, so that in itself was a gnus. That's a gnus. You know why? They couldn't circumcise themselves because Hashem wouldn't allow the sun in on them, again, because of the sin of the spies. And therefore, the fact that they didn't have a bris milah, which caused them not to do the Korban Pesach, that is the gnai, that is a disgrace. So according to Tosfos' second approach, there was only 1 year that they brought the Korban Pesach. The other years they didn't bring the Korban Pesach. Not because they weren't obligated, essentially they were obligated, but they couldn't bring the Korban Pesach. They couldn't bring the Korban Pesach because they didn't have a bris milah. Why didn't they have a bris milah? Because of the fact that without the northern wind blowing and scattering the clouds, that wouldn't allow the sunlight to come in and they couldn't heal properly. So basically it was dangerous to perform bris milah in the desert. And the fact that they were not able to perform bris milah because they didn't have a bris milah, which was caused due to the fact they're excommunicated because of the sin of the spies, that is the gnus, that is a disgrace for the Jewish people not bringing the Korban Pesach through the rest of the 40 years in the desert. At the same time, they weren't doing a sin for not bringing the Korban Pesach, although essentially they're obligated, because they couldn't. They couldn't because they couldn't have a bris milah, and without having a bris milah, you can't bring the Korban Pesach.
They say when you do the offering, talking about the most holy place is the north section. You do like a burnt offering that's
right
in the north.
Right.
Is that tied into this at all?
Not that I see. There seems to be a certain northern wind that has a certain that accomplishes certain things, and without it, certain things don't happen.
So maybe that's why they have the offering for that,
right? No. So this is the two approaches of Tosfos to explain what Rashi says, that the fact that they only brought the Korban Pesach this time in the desert is the shame of is a source of disgrace for the Jewish people. Now the Gemara Yevamos brings another explanation as to why they did not have a bris milah. And again, it has to do with the inability to heal properly. And the Gemara there says the problem is because of the traveling. Meaning you travel, as much as they are protected by the clouds, traveling is something that takes a toll on you. And therefore, the weakness that would come to them due to traveling, that would cause a danger again to the process of healing. You know, they're having a bris milah being done. They need to heal properly. But with the traveling that would be happening, that would take a toll on their bodies, and therefore, that would not allow them to heal properly. That's the first reason that the Gemara actually brings why a bris milah wasn't done. So the Gemara has two reasons. Bris milah wasn't done because of the traveling, of the toll on their bodies from traveling. The other explanation is there was no sunlight due to the fact the northern wind didn't blow the clouds away and bring in the sunlight. Now, there's a very obvious question on that first explanation of the Gemara as to why they didn't have a bris milah because of the traveling, of the toil, and the burden on them of traveling. And that is, if we turn a few pages, actually, it's the next page, page 780, Pasuk Tesvav. This is the middle of the page. Pasuk Tesvav. And on the day that the Mishkan was erected, the cloud covered the Mishkan, the tent of the testimony. And in the evening there was a fire that appeared on the Mishkan until the morning. This is how it always was. The cloud covered it. And an appearance of fire at night. And according to when the cloud would rise from upon the tent, that is when the Jewish people knew it's time to travel. And in the place where the cloud would dwell, would rest, that is where the Jewish people would camp. By the direction of Hashem, they would travel. Yisrael would travel. V'pi Hashem yachnu, and by the command, by the direction of Hashem, they would camp. Kol yimei asher yishkan ha'anan al ha'mishkan yachnu. As long as the cloud remained on the Mishkan, that is how long they would encamp. U'b'harech ha'anan al ha'mishkan yamim rabim, and when the anan would stay for a long time on the Mishkan for many days, v'shamu b'nei Yisrael as mishmeres Hashem lo yiso. The Jewish people would keep the charge of Hashem and not travel. Some days the cloud was only a few days on the Mishkan. Based on the direction of Hashem, they would care with camp. By the command of Hashem, they would travel. And sometimes the cloud was only there from evening until the morning. And then in the morning, the cloud would get up and they'd have to travel. The point of what we're reading here is the Torah is telling us that the Jewish people traveled and camped according to what the cloud that rested on the Mishkan did. Sometimes they were there for a long time, sometimes they were there for a very short time, whatever, but they understood that the cloud resting on the Mishkan, that was Hashem's command and direction to them to either travel or to camp. Now, when the Pasuk talks about that there were times when the cloud remained on the Mishkan for many days, one example of that is that in one place they remained there for almost two years they were there. So you'd think that when you're camped for 2 years in a place, wouldn't you be able to do a bris milah then when you're not traveling?
Because they didn't know it was going to be 2 years.
The answer is they had no idea.
Right.
The answer is every day they never knew if they have to pack up or not. Now the truth is that when they camped, they did unpack, right? They didn't just, they unpacked. The Mishkan was then re-erected and everything, and people started unpacking. But they never knew when the signal was going to be, okay, everybody, let's pack up and let's get rolling again. They never knew. So although at the end of the day they did stay there for a long time, and they may have said to themselves, Rabbeinu Shalom, you knew we were going to be here for a long time. Why don't you let us know? We could settle in, we can do some brisin, and everybody can get settled, and we'll be good. We'll be good to go. Nope, that's not the way it was meant to be. They're constantly meant to be in a state of never knowing what the next day was going to bring. And there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is because just as they had to wait for the money every single day for their sustenance, here too, it was being instilled upon the Jewish people that they are completely dependent on the Rabbeinu Shalom. It is everything that they do in their life is based on the command of Hashem, and the only thing they need in life is that relationship with Hashem. All they need in life really is to follow Hashem's guidance on when to go, when not to go, what to do, how to live their lives. As much as a person likes to be able to be independent and likes to feel in control of themselves, the lesson the Jewish people received for 40 years is that what you need in life is your relationship with Hashem. You need to depend on Him, and He will be with you. And therefore, that lesson was actually worth instilling in the Jewish people to the point that they couldn't bring, that they wouldn't even be able to do a bris milah for that. Now again, they would have If they would have not sinned by the spies, they would have been in Eretz Yisrael right away, and none of this would have had to have come about. That is true. At the same time, though, that the fact is that they were also in a situation. Hashem did create a situation for them not to be able to do the bris milah as long as they were in the desert. And all that adds to the lesson, to the importance of the lesson that was being conveyed to them, and that is that what you need in life is your dependence on Hashem. You depend on Him, you stay with Him, and He will stay with you.
But did the Jews have a control, for instance, were they there 2 years because they behaved?
It depends. It really depends. Even in the cases where they stayed for a long time, for instance, after the Chet Egel, after the sin of the spies, it's not clear that they had to be there that long. I mean, for whatever reason, the Rebbeinu Shem decided to stay that long, to stay that long. But there are other situations where there are longer periods and shorter periods. And during the long periods, they had no idea what's going to happen the next day. But that was all part of the lesson. All part of the lesson was that what you need for your life is to be dependent on the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Realize that dependence and put your trust in Him. Now, there's a very interesting shalah that says, based on this part, he says it on this part, the part of the Pasha, where it says, "Api Hashem Yisu Bnei Yisrael, v'api Hashem Yachnu." By the mouth, by the command of Hashem, they will travel, and by the mouth of Hashem, by His command, they will camp. That it's not only this episode in the Torah that every move was based on the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's will. That's what life's all about. And therefore, says the Shalah, before you do anything, what should you say?
Appreciate what Hashem gives you.
But what do we say before we do anything? No. Well, that's after. That could be before. What? We say, Be'ezras Hashem, Emirtz Hashem, God willing. The Shalah says that's based on this. The Torah was Hashem was instilling upon the Jewish people that your every move happens by my will. And that is what we are declaring when we say Emir Hashem. We are saying that we know that every move that we make, everything we do, is by the will of Hashem and only with the will of Hashem. And the Shalah says that when you say it, don't just say it like by rote, Emir Hashem, just by rote, because that it's a habit. You should say it with meaning, because every time you say it with meaning, you're instilling in yourself that important lesson. Now, this same idea appears, or is brought, or is explained, rather, in last week's parasha. Go back to page 764. Top of the page, Pasuk Chaf Zayin. The Pasuk says, this is after the Birchas Kohanim, after Hashem tells Aaron how to bless the Jewish people, and he finishes the bracha, V'yasem Lecha Shalom, right? That's the end of the bracha. V'samu Eshmiel B'nei Yisrael V'ani Avarchem. And they shall place my name on the Jewish people, and I will bless them. What does that mean? What does it mean that the Kohanim place Hashem's name on the Jewish people, and by doing so, Hashem says, I will bless them? What does that mean? So I saw it brought down from the Akedah Yitzchak. The Akedah Yitzchak explains like this. He starts off with an analogy. If you look at a winding river, there are certain parts that the river is very wide, and sometimes the river gets very narrow, which means some places there's a lot of water and some places there's a little bit of water. The factors as to what the deciding factor as to how much water will be in one spot has nothing to do with how far or how close you are from the source of the river. That makes absolutely no difference. It's all about the capacity. It's all about the capacity of the area through which the water is going. If it has a large capacity, then it holds a lot of water. If it has a small capacity, it holds a little bit of water. So too, says Akedah Yitzchak, when it comes to Hashem's blessings. Hashem's blessings is not necessarily about how close you are to the source. It's about how much a capacity do you create within yourself to receive the blessing. But what decides how much capacity you have to receive the blessing is realizing that Hashem is the source of everything. And therefore, anytime a person is in a state where they're in need of something, And in that state, they have the recognition that Hashem is the source, and they truly recognize that, and they truly appreciate that. That makes a difference as to how much blessing they receive. We say in davening, Hashem says, "Harchev picha v'mal'eyu," widen your mouth and I will fill it. Which means that when a person davens, or breaks a bracha, or whatever it is, he focuses on the fact that Hashem is the source of everything, and he truly focuses on that. And he asks Hashem for whatever he needs, and he realizes that everything that he needs only comes from Hashem. The more a person really and truly recognizes that and feels that, that is that defines, that creates the capacity to receive the blessing. So when the pasuk says, "Let the Kohanim shall place my name on the Jewish people," how do they do that? The answer is because when they say the Birchas Kohanim, when they give the blessings, they say Yivrechacha Hashem v'yishmerecha. Hashem shall bless you and guard you. Your Hashem panaveilecha v'chunecha. Hashem shall shine its countenance upon you and be gracious to you. Yisra Hashem panaveilecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. Hashem will lift his face to you. Hashem will show favor to you and give you peace. The Kohanim, when they give those blessings, they have to give the blessings with the right feeling and impress upon the Jewish people, it's the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that does all this. All the blessings, everything that you seek is from Hashem. And when the Jewish people listen to that blessing and listen intently to that blessing and take the blessing to heart, they too are internalizing that lesson, that everything comes from Hashem. When that happens, when the Kohanim place my name on the Jewish people, which means through their blessings they impart to the Jewish people, and the Jewish people internalize that Hashem is the source of everything, that's when I bless them.
But they have to go in a certain way too, the Jewish person. You can't get a blessing and misbehave or whatever.
That is true. But at the same time though, misbehaving actually becomes, let's call it, a deterrent to receiving the blessing. But at the same time, the point is, I believe the point that Kiddush Yitzchak is that, but every person, wherever they are, if they can bring themselves to true recognition and feeling of Hashem being the source of everything, then the point is that even a person who may not be so but if he comes to a point of true recognition that Hashem is the source, he has the potential to receive blessing.
Potential.
He has the potential to receive blessings. It could be very well, as you say, that certain sins, or whatever it may be, become reasons to take that away. At the same time, even with the lack of merit that he may have, with the recognition that Hashem is the source, he will still be able to receive blessing. So therefore, from our part, our part is always to focus on when we need, on for our needs. Our focus is the Rebbeinu Shlom is the source. Everything comes from Him. Nothing is beyond Him. Hashem does kindness. We say in davening, Reisa Hashem esireyav esamiyachalim lechastei. Hashem has will for those who fear Him, for those who hope for His kindness. When we hope for His kindness, that's a recognition of, I may not be deserving, but Hashem is still kind.
I got to work at it.
And I have to hope for that. So again, there's no question that your behavior makes a difference. But actually, the focus, the avoda, what a person has to be working on with their davening, what a person has to be working on, and when they have in requesting their needs, is on Hashem is the source, and put your hope in the fact that Hashem is the source, and I'm not dependent on anything else, and Hashem can be kind with me even if I'm not deserving, and my capacity for receiving blessing is dependent on how much I recognize Hashem is the source, and that can make a difference even when I may not be the most worthy. Now, let's now go to the back to the parasha. And, okay, page 788. Now, page 788 is where the Jewish people begin complaining about the man. With all the benefits of the man, they complain And they talk about what they remember from the, in quotation marks, good old days of Egypt, where they had, you know, that solid food of meat and vegetables, and all they have now is the man. And when we, and the Torah tells us that, you know, that the benefits of the man. And now let's read Pasuk Yud. Vayishma Moshe Sa'am Barecha L'Mishpachaysav. And Moshe heard the nation crying in family groups, Ishla Pesach Aloi, each person by the opening of his tent. Vayichav Hashem Ma'id Vayinei Moshe Ra. Hashem became very angry, and it was very bad in the eyes of Moshe. So what does it mean, Barecha L'Mishpachaysav, crying with, by groups of family? So Rashi comments, Mishpachas Mishpachas Nasafim, different families would gather together, Ubeichem, and cry together, the Pharisaim through Amos and Begoli, to basically publicly, to show their public unhappiness. Okay? So again, this whole gathering of families is again to publicize their unhappiness. Rabbi Seinu Amru and our sages say, when it says crying to their families, L'mishpachas to their families means al iske mishpachas, because of issues regarding family, al arayas and asaras lahem, because of all the forbidden relatives, relatives that now came upon them. So Rashi has, our sages teach us that although when you look at the words of the pasuk and they're crying by their families, the pasuk pshat is like Rashi says, families gather together and they cry together. What's the point? To show their frustration. But then Chazal say, but there was something deeper going on. What was really going on when it says crying for their families was because now they found themselves in a situation where the Torah had now forbade on them certain family members, and that created difficulties in marriage, and therefore they were crying over that. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, you know, this may be a medrash, but why did Chazal feel it necessary to say this when, what's forcing him to say it? The pasuk doesn't say it. The pasuk says they're crying over the month. That's what it says. What was it that Chazal saw in this episode that made them say, that allowed them to say that there was something more going on? So Yaakov explains that Chazal, looking at what's happening here, found something very strange. And what they found strange was the fact that this complaining about the man and making such a fuss about the man, there's something missing. All right, yes, he was very nice in Egypt. You had your meat and you had your vegetables. And this all may be interpreted as, well, the Jewish people, they're so recently out of slavery. They have a hard time, you know, giving up their old habits and all that kind of explanations that are sometimes offered. And you know, you could explain it that way, but Chazal said, no, there's something more going on here. There were a lot of benefits to the man. The man tastes like anything that you wanted. You weren't missing anything with the man. You know, to start saying, well, they just kind of always couldn't get off their old habits and that was their problem, Chazal said, that doesn't fit. That doesn't hold water. That's not the way to explain this. And therefore, they understood there's something deeper going on. And that deeper going on is what lies in this word, Barecha L'Mishpachaysav, crying to their families. That they were crying over family matters. Now, the fact that the Pasuk doesn't say it is really because if you were to ask them why they were crying, they would not have said to you that they are crying because of the family matters. They would have said they're crying because of the man. Now, were they in their minds, okay, if you'd ask them that, they would say, we're crying because of the man, okay? Were they really saying to themselves, that's not really true, but, you know, we don't want to say why? Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that that's not the pshat. Actually, it was their subconscious. It was subconscious. Subconscious means that we have certain thoughts and certain perspectives in our minds that haven't come to the forefront. They haven't, so to speak, come into actuality. We ourselves don't necessarily realize them, but they're back there and they're having their influence. And therefore, what's happening here by the Jewish people is that they're crying. And why are they crying? They're crying over the man. But Chazal told us something more has to be happening here. And what they told us was that what was happening here was something in their subconscious. Which I think Rabbi Yaakov says, he says it's that's the status of, you know, the Torah talks about thoughts in your kidneys or your heart. That's the subconscious. That's before it actually formulates in your mind. It's in a different place. But the point is, this is how he explains it as this was their subconscious. The subconscious was that they were really upset over the marriage issues. But it hadn't come to the forefront yet. And therefore, it manifested itself in crying over something else. It manifested over finding a problem in something else. But that wasn't the real problem. The real problem was in their subconscious, which was the family issues. And perhaps even in their own minds, like the family issues, that can't be it. It was almost like they wouldn't even admit to that. And therefore it was still in their subconscious. They wouldn't admit that to themselves. It hadn't come to the forefront of their minds. And at this point, and it still didn't. But Chazal is saying, looking at it, either with their understanding of human psychology, through their power of Ruach HaKodesh, they understood there is something more going on here. Reb Yaakov explains the same thing if we go back to Parshas Lech Lecha by Lot. And that is, when the Torah talks about how the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Abraham were quarreling over the land. This is, go back to page 60. So, the Torah tells us, Lot, who was traveling with Abraham, also became very rich with cattle and sheep and tents. But there wasn't enough, you know, but the land wasn't large enough to hold them both. There were quarrels between the cattle of Abraham and the cattle of Lot. Abraham says to Lot, let's not have any more quarrels. I'll go one direction, you go the other direction, you choose. So the Pasuk says, Vayisa Lot, as Einav, Lot lifted his eyes, Vayaras called Kikar Hayarden, and he saw the entire plain of the Jordan. Kuchula Mashka, it was all very fertile. This was before Hashem destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, and it says, Vayivcha Lot as called Kikar Hayarden, and Lot chose the plain of the Jordan, and Lot traveled away. And even though the people of Sodom were very evil and very wicked, Lot set up camp up to Sodom. So Rashi tells us, okay, Rashi brings down a medrash on that pasuk, that it says, and Lot lifted his eyes, he saw the entire plain, how fertile it was. So the Medrash says, Darsha Lignai. The Medrash interprets this, again, in a way of disgrace for Lot. I'll show you Shtufei Zima. Because the people of Sodom and Gomorrah were very immoral, Barachal Lot B'Shchunaisam, that is why Lot chose to live by them. So again, the pasuk says Lot is choosing to go by to live by them because the land is good for the sheep and the cattle. And the Medrash says no. The reason why Lot is choosing to go there is because of the fact that Lot is drawn to the fact that they're immoral. So which one is it? So again, Rabbi Yaakov explained, again, why do Chazal feel that they have to say this? Is what in the pasukim tells them that they have to explain that Lot had some other ulterior motive other than the fact that it was a good piece of land for him to raise his cattle. And here too, the way Rabbi Yaakov explains it is that it doesn't make sense for Lot to decide to split up with Abraham and go live by Sodom. It didn't make sense. And I'll add my two cents to this. You know, there's a question. There's a fight between the shepherds of Abraham and Lot. So Abram says, let's split. Why didn't Abram say to Lot, let's work this out? So the answer is that apparently he knew that it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. From what Abram sees, it's not going to work. Or Abram understands the only way to get it to work is to threaten Lot with splitting up. And maybe then he'll do something about it. Let's see, maybe that'll do something. And what does Lot do? Lot says, okay, I'll go there. From that point, the Chazal looked at it and said like this. Lot became rich from being with Avram. He didn't become rich on his own. The pasuk says, "V'gamot haholech im Avram." V'gamot haholech es Avram. It's in the book of Ayalim. Lot, who went with Avram, became rich. He became rich because he was with Avram. So, in essence, for Lot to split up because of a quarrel with the shepherds didn't make sense. Now, at the end of the day, he can tell you, well, yeah, you know, probably I'm not going to be able to keep these guys in line, and it's just not worth it. But deep down, it should have been worth it. And therefore, Chazal understands there's something else going on here. There's something else motivating him. There's something else drawing him away from Abraham. What's drawing him is what the people in Sodom are like. The Yitzhar is pulling him. And again, he says it's subconscious. This is not, Lot is not conscious of this. Lot is not conscious, is not in his mind saying, I want to go there because I want to have a wild time. Lot's not saying that. But deep down in his subconscious, that's what's pulling him. And this is something that we realize, the Torah is imparting to us, the Chazal are imparting to us a very important lesson, that we have a subconscious that has a tremendous influence on what we do. And awareness is the best way to stay safe. Because you may say to yourself, well, it's my subconscious, what am I supposed to do? The answer is that it may only be your subconscious, but you can feel that you can stop before you do something and say, maybe there's something else motivating me here. And then you start doing some introspection and you can reach what lies in your subconscious. But this is what Chazal were teaching us in these episodes, that there is a subconscious that influences strongly. And awareness is the best way to stay safe.